The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
For Thursday, July 29th, 2021, it's The Brief from WABE. I'm Emil Moffitt. The mayor of Atlanta has issued a mask mandate for her city among a Delta variant-fueled rise in COVID-19 cases. Sam Whitehead reports a similar move from Keisha Lance Bottoms last summer kicked off a high-profile fight with state leaders.
Bottoms signed an executive order late Wednesday that requires people wear face masks in most indoor public spaces and many private businesses in the city. She says it's a response to a rising number of infections in Atlanta and new guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that even fully vaccinated people wear masks in certain settings. Bottoms' decision to issue a similar order last summer drew opposition from Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, including legal action. His office eventually allowed localities to issue mask rules if infection rates were high enough. Kemp said this week he does not plan to issue a statewide mask mandate. Sam Whitehead, WABE News.
And as Sam just reported, two of Georgia's largest cities, including Atlanta and Savannah, have put mask mandates back into place as the number of coronavirus infections continues on an upward trend. The state's vaccination rate, meanwhile, remains well below the national average. The Public Religion Research Institute and Interfaith Youth Corps have been gauging public sentiment on vaccines for the last several months. CEO and founder of PRRI, Robert P. Jones, as the number of people who cite religious reasons for being vaccine hesitant is falling.
We found that faith-based approaches, that is churches, synagogues, mosques, and other religious congregations offering things like information on the vaccines or actually popping up a vaccine clinic at their congregation, that these things have actually made a significant difference in the country.
But he says the number of Americans who outright refuse to get the vaccine remains pretty much the same. U.S. Senator John Ossoff continues to push for his Medicaid look-alike program to be included in the infrastructure package being worked out in Congress. His plan would offer coverage to low-income residents of states like Georgia that have declined to expand Medicaid. Ossoff says that would result in better health care outcomes and reduce health care spending.
Our country pays enormous costs, and the public bears these costs because we neglect people's health. And this legislation will be a significant step towards solving that problem.
Fellow Senator Raphael Warnock is co-sponsor of the plan. Georgia is one of a dozen states that has declined to expand Medicaid to all low-income individuals. State leaders are pursuing a more limited expansion of the program. It is currently under federal review. Construction at Georgia Power's Plant Vogtle will take longer and cost more than what the company had originally expected. Molly Samuel reports.
In a news release, Georgia Power CEO Chris Womack said the company knew that building the first new nuclear power reactors in the country would be challenging. Both of the reactors at the power plant near Augusta were supposed to be up and running years ago. Now, the company says one should be ready to go in the second quarter next year and the other in early 2023. Georgia Power says its capital costs have risen to more than $9 billion. Under a previous agreement with state regulators, the company will take on increased costs and a lower return on investment. Georgia Power customers pay for the financing for the project on their monthly bills and will eventually pay for all approved capital costs once the reactors start operating. Molly Samuel, WABE News.
Georgia child care centers are struggling to hire and keep staff members, despite federal stimulus money that's enabled providers to stay open. Martha Dalton reports low wages are keeping many workers away.
The summer program at Bells Ferry Learning Center in Woodstock is filled with the sounds of children happily eating lunch and talking. But what you can't hear in this lively bunch of kids is how the center has struggled to keep staff during COVID-19. Sharon Foster is the center's owner.
It really has devastated us. You know, frequently you can go down to Cheeseburger Bobby's or Target and make $14, $15 an hour. And you have to be highly educated and have years of experience to reach that pay level in childcare.
The average pay for most child care workers who serve kids ages 5 and younger is $9 to $10 an hour. Foster says that makes it hard to keep good teachers who can make a lot more teaching kindergarten in public schools.
We have to have all the same skills. We have to be able to write lesson plans and execute them. We have to understand brain development. You know, the majority of that occurs from birth to 3. So we're the ones setting the foundation for this child's lifelong learning.
Unlike public schools, which are funded by taxes, child care providers rely on tuition. So Foster says if they want to pay teachers more, that cost is usually passed on to parents. Experts say low pay is the biggest obstacle to retaining child care staff. Pam Tatum is the president and CEO of Quality Care for Children, which helps parents find child care.
The child care system we have is really subsidized by low wages of teachers.
That's true even after an influx of federal money, she says. In March, Congress approved a stimulus package that included $1.5 billion for Georgia's child care providers. In most cases, the money didn't go toward pay raises. Tatum says it would have been expensive for centers to do that.
If the increase in wages goes through the child care program has the taxes to pay on those wages. So the best way to do it would be a wage supplement that came directly from the state.
The state did give workers direct payments of $1,000, but Tatum says some workers left after receiving the bonus. More stimulus money is on the way, and providers hope it will help them afford to pay workers more. But even if it does, stimulus money won't last forever. That's why people like Pam Tatum want state and federal officials to find a permanent solution.
We will never achieve sustainable, high-quality child care until we're able to address the low compensation of teachers.
To make up for low pay, the Bells Ferry Learning Center gives employees other benefits. They offer health care for workers, which a lot of centers can't do. They also give paid time off, holidays, and are currently giving new hires a $1,200 signing bonus.
That's a big lure for potential employees.
Jo Peavy is a teacher at Bells Ferry. She also helps with hiring.
When I turn over 3 pages of benefits that you're entitled to, everybody is like, oh my gosh, I don't get this where I currently am.
Peavy says the extras Bells Ferry offers help with recruiting. But even with those incentives, the center still needs to hire about 3 more staff members before school starts. Peavy says it's in everyone's best interest to find a solution because childcare is critical to keeping other industries going.
Of course, doctors and nurses are essential workers, and your ambulance drivers and your police and firemen, but none of those people can go to their job if we're not open to take their kids.
Providers think as school starts and parents head back to the office, the demand for childcare will pick up. But it's not clear if centers like this one can meet staffing demands, especially if wages don't increase. Martha Dalton, WABE News.
A Metro Atlanta animal shelter says it hasn't seen a high number of returns due to COVID-19 adoptions, but there is an increase in receiving lost pets and spring litters. Now, as Aaron Trimper reports, the shelter is looking to foster homes to help curb overcrowding.
The Lifeline Animal Project shelters in Fulton and DeKalb County are looking to place 125 dogs into foster homes for 2 weeks. Karen Hirsch is the public relations director for the Lifeline Animal Project. She says the shelters are using videos to help partner dogs with foster homes during the pandemic.
A dog who's stressed out in the shelter and maybe either barking or over in the corner will do cute and humorous things in the house that a lot of our fosters will then either video or take pictures of, and someone will see it online and adopt them.
Lifeline will provide vet care, supplies, and support to all foster homes. Lifeline also runs a Pets for Life program that provides supplies and vet care to the 7 lowest income zip codes in Atlanta. Aaron Tremper, WABE News.
The Atlanta Falcons open their training camp today in Flowery Branch, even as the number of COVID-19 infections continues to grow in Georgia and many parts of the country. First-year head coach Arthur Smith says it's up to each player to decide if they want to be vaccinated.
We've got a big portion that's fully vaccinated. We've got guys that are waiting after their second shot. We've got a couple that are in between, and we only have a handful that haven't gotten it yet. So we feel really good where we're at.
The NFL is not requiring the vaccine, but warns the teams could face forfeits if there's an outbreak among unvaccinated players. The Falcons' first preseason game is August 13th. That's it for The Brief. You can find more local news at our website, wabe.org. Lily Oppenheimer is our producer. Our editor is Kathleen Quillian. In for Jim Burris, I'm Emil Moffitt. Thanks for listening.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Local, state, national politics. WABE and NPR have the coverage you need. I'm Jim Burris, host of WABE's All Things Considered. Whether it's on the air at 90.1, streaming online, or connecting through our mobile app, WABE keeps you on top of election 2024 in what's sure to be a pivotal year in politics. And for candidates and ballot information, visit our election hub at wabe.org/election2024.